Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Senate Republicans voted to overturn Democratic Governor Tony Evers' emergency order requiring face masks. Assembly Republicans postponed a Thursday vote, saying they need to know whether that would hurt food stamp recipients.
A new report says state government will have a healthier surplus of $1.7 billion when the next budget cycle starts July 1. Plans for a capital statue honoring African-American leader and civil rights champion Vel Phillips take a step forward. Rewind, your week in review for January 29.
I'm Steve Walters.
I want to thank Scott,
our capital correspondent for the Associated Press, for filling in this week for JR. JR is attending a funeral in Indiana. Okay, Scott, let's go right into a lot of news on COVID. Let's start with Tuesday's vote in the state Senate, 18-13, to overturn the governor's latest mask order, that ordering face masks statewide in enclosed areas. Let's talk about that 18-13 vote. You had two Senate Republicans, Senator Cuenca and Senator Coles, who voted with the 11 Democrats. One Democrat, Mr. Wirch of Kenosha, wasn't voting. Scott, their principal argument was, they said repeatedly, it's not over masks, it's over the procedure, the governor continually extending emergency orders, correct?
Right. Just a little background on the procedure that you mentioned. The governor has issued a series of emergency health orders, and then tied to those, he issues the mask mandate. So they're technically repealing the emergency health order, but by doing that, they're in effect, they're repealing, and in reality, they're repealing the mask order. So this is something Republicans had talked about. Former Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald had talked about from day one when the mask order was first issued last summer, but they never brought it up for a vote. And so here you have a month into the new leadership with Senator LeMahieu, and one of the first things they're voting on is repealing the mandate.
Yeah, and yeah. The Senate voted on what you and I, the legislative jargon, passed a clean resolution. In other words, all it said was, we are rescinding the governor's latest extension, 90-day extension of the face mask order, correct? It was clean resolution.
Right. I mean, it was up or down on that one issue.
Right. Right. And then it got a little muddled because the state assembly was to consider that same clean resolution on Thursday, but a legislative fiscal bureau statement, a report sought by Democratic Representative Evan Goyke of Milwaukee, said that if you do this, you would jeopardize $49.3 million in additional food stamp benefits. So take us from there. What happened next?
Month.
Thank you.
Right. So the memo was written the night before the vote, the morning of the vote. I spoke with Assembly Speaker Voss, and they were trying to figure out what to do about this information, which Voss later said came as a complete surprise to him, and he doesn't like surprises. Steve, you've been around a long time. I've been around a long time. You don't see things like this happen very often. When something is scheduled for a vote, especially something as consequential as this, the vote almost always happens, like 99.9% of the time. You and I could sit here and try to remember times where that hasn't happened, and it would be very, very few.
We can count them on one hand, excuse me.
Right. And so the fact that they had to pull back at the 11th hour and say they needed to figure out, you know, the implications of what this vote would mean. Of course, we haven't talked about what the Senate did yesterday prior to that, going over there, trying to get a fix that would allow the governor to still issue an emergency order, but have it only be for the purpose of accessing that federal money. That was something that Speaker Voss said he wanted to take a closer look at. But notably, Steve, he was very emphatic at a WisPolitics Q&A after the session ended that it's not a matter of if this vote will happen to repeal the mask mandate. It's a matter of when.
Right.
Right.
Okay. And as you said, the Senate tried to adopt the fix as a amendment that would allow the state to continue to benefit from, good point, $49.3 million a month in additional food stamp money. But now, Scott, let's focus on, at one point, Senate Republicans and the governor had a deal. But now you have Republicans in both Senate and Assembly apparently agreeing on additional things that weren't part of what Governor Evers says with that was that original compromise, including prohibiting the requirement that you must have a COVID-19 vaccination, stopping local health officials from restricting houses of worship, and legislative oversight. So how did this morph where Senate Republicans and Evers thought they had a deal, but now Republicans in both houses are adding things that the governor at today's DHS briefing said may be problematic?
Well, that's an understatement. Yeah, this has been a real tricky thing to follow. And for the public, I'm sure it's almost impossible to keep track of what's been going on. But the Assembly passed a very broad COVID bill earlier this month that had those elements in it you just mentioned, along with many, many other things. The Senate passed a very much more narrow bill that Governor Evers came out and said, I will sign that bill once the Assembly passes it. The Assembly did not pass that bill. They passed the bill that has those extra elements in it. And now we're in this position where what is the governor going to do? And I take that back. The Senate passed the new version, and now the Assembly has got it back with the amendment on it that would deal with the mask mandate issue. So not final passage yet, very close, and Governor Evers is sending a pretty clear signal that this is not a bill that he's comfortable with.
Right. And in a speech on the Assembly floor, Speaker Voss said, here's what we gave up to try to achieve a compromise with the Senate. And he listed, I'm just going to list two items. He said, we're going to take out the restriction that every 2 months, a two-thirds vote of school boards must approve continuing to offer online only. And the idea, another thing Voss said we took out in the spirit of good faith to reach agreement with Senate Republicans is oversight over limits on how much restrictions local health officials could impose on their businesses. So those are no longer, those have been jettisoned. This is a good time to listen to some of the debate. Democratic State Senator Tim Carpenter says you cannot blow out a candle with a mask on, and then he tries to demonstrate that. Senator Van Wongard comes back talking about that this is not about whether masks are good or bad, but let's talk about the science here. And then, as you alluded to, Speaker Voss talked about the reasons for postponing, and that's important because he, as you said, Scott, he said the Assembly is going to come back and repeal that face mask order. But Speaker Voss said why we hit the pause button on Thursday. Please.
It's very frustrating to sort of criticize the governor for his plans because there was no input from this legislature other than complaining. When I look around this room, I don't see a lot of masks. You couldn't blow out a candle wearing a mask. So I would like to, if I can't do that, what I'd like to do is instead go.
Oh my goodness, I hear all this science talk on this floor. I have researched masks and efficiencies, etc., and I'll give you a few stats here. The CDC and the FDA go right back to wash your hands. That is the most important thing. Continually wash your hands to kill the virus. Secondly, socially distance. Don't go places if you're sick. Wash your hands. Wear a mask. You can wear a mask. And I would not advocate to not wear a mask. If you're out, wear one. But it should not be mandated to have to wear one.
I think that the amendment that we worked with in the Senate that they adopted onto AB1 probably fixes the issue. But I don't know that for sure. And our job is to guarantee when we pass legislation that we know what the ramifications are. Unfortunately, when our Senate colleagues passed that, they didn't necessarily do the same level of due diligence, which is why we had to add that amendment to AB1 today. We do not want to repeat that mistake. That's why we are not going to be bringing up SJR3 today. We are going to take time and work with the Fiscal Bureau and the legislature, along with all of the appropriate agencies, to guarantee that when we pass SGR 3, and we will pass it, that we do it in a way that does not have any potential financial implications for the state, and we do it in a way that guarantees that the goal that we set, which is to say this is not about masks, which is why I have one on. You will see our entire chamber, people wear their masks. They follow the CDC guidelines. But it is about the governor's executive overreach.
Okay, Scott, now let's talk about where we are in terms of vaccinating. Right now, we're still finishing up phase 1A. Those over 65, police, EMTs, other emergency workers, firefighters. But now let's talk about the new phase 1B. The next group of people who could be vaccinated as of March 1, which was announced this week by DHS. Teachers and child care workers, utility and public transit workers, mink husbandry workers, which is very interesting because minks could develop some type of variant, but anyway, that's more than we need to know about minks. Grocery and food supply workers and prison inmates. Any surprises in this decision? Because the DHS basically went along with the subcommittee, right?
Right. There's kind of a bureaucratic process to get to who gets on the list you just described. A couple committees have to go through it, and then DHS has the final word. They're under tremendous pressure to broaden who gets vaccinated because everyone wants it. But the vaccine supply is not meeting demand exponentially. Demand exceeds the supply right now. So what you're seeing politically in all of this is DHS saying, hey, we'd love to vaccinate everyone. It's just not possible, and it would be chaotic and cause anger and frustration if we open this up to too many people at once, because we don't even have enough to vaccinate the over 65 population right now, let alone all these other folks when we add them. On the other side, you have Republicans putting a lot of pressure on the department to do things differently, including yesterday the assembly passing a bill that would say effective immediately, everyone 60 and up is eligible. And by March 15th, everyone is eligible, which is far more aggressive than DHS has plans for. And at the current supply rate of the vaccine, there'd be nowhere near enough to meet that kind of demand.
Okay. And I've got this question because I couldn't follow all of that yesterday, just busy doing other stuff. Have Senate Republicans said they would go along with the Sanfilippo bill that would say after March 15th, you would open up vaccinations to the general public? Can help me understand that.
If they have, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen them comment on that. The Senate won't be back for a couple weeks at least. And the governor's not going to sign that bill. It's more of just a demonstration of a political yardstick or putting a marker down saying this is kind of where we're at, and just giving more opportunity for Republicans to hit Evers over the way he's handled the vaccination rollout.
Right. And Deputy Secretary of DHS Julie Willems Van Dyke says, as you said, we need 3 to 4 times the 70,000 doses per week to meet the goal. She also clarified that in this morning's briefing. 70,000 is what they get for first doses a week. I thought that was an important clarification. Let's quickly go through the numbers that were just released today at today's DHS briefing. They have vaccinated 470 shots in the arms, 476,854. I'll go a little slower. That includes 91,058 who've received second doses. And they just said today, let me check my notes. This week, they vaccinated 45,000, which is included in that 476. And that included 35,000 getting the first doses and about 9,000 getting the second. The 7-day average, as announced today, 1,392. That's positives. That's the lowest in weeks. But we still have had 539,945 positive cases. And we are at 5,860 deaths. Now's the time to hear. We're going to come back to this after a video clip in which Julie Willems Van Dyke was asked at the briefing earlier this week, when are we going to get to the general public? So let's hear her answer, please.
I take issue with anyone thinking a system that within just a little bit over a month has delivered 362,000 vaccines to the citizens of Wisconsin is a bungled system. I think it's a system that is working very well. As to no sense of urgency, I'd love to invite the representative to come meet the hundreds of people who are working day and night to make this system work. In terms of opening up vaccine to everyone by mid-March, I think you've heard from us why we think that is not possible, not a good idea. If we quintupled the number of people trying to get in the system at the same time, would completely overwhelm the system. And so without a significant increase in vaccine, we don't think that's the best strategy. There will be a time that we will open up to everybody, and it will be after we've gotten some significant populations of people already vaccinated, so it's not all 4.6 million adults in Wisconsin coming in. It will be a smaller subset of those because people have already been vaccinated. Our system is moving forward. We are vaccinating many people. We are accelerating every week. And we are getting the vaccine that the federal government has provided us out into the arms of people of Wisconsin.
Okay, one of the main elements of news that you and I have practiced is the prominence. So I just want to do a little follow-up. The Journal Sentinel reported that Alex Lazary, vice president of the Milwaukee Bucks, age 33, was vaccinated. When the governor was asked about this twice, he said he didn't know the circumstances. But he also said, let me assure Wisconsin residents that my wife, Mr. Evers and Kathy Evers, quote, have not jumped the line. Scott, you've been watching Mr. Lazary's tweets. What's he saying about this?
Yeah, so the Journal Sentinel wrote a story today, and then Alex Lazary tweeted about it and just said, hey, I had a family connection with the senior center. My uncle is the rabbi there. He called and said there's extra doses, and my wife didn't want one because she's pregnant, and so I took the dose rather than have it go to waste. And if you get the chance to be vaccinated that way, you should grab it too, because the more people vaccinated, the better. DHS did address that and said, hey, you know, we agree that no doses ought to be wasted. But we also have guidelines that providers are to follow the order that we've already discussed and not give out doses to people intentionally jumping the line. But if they have extra doses and there's no one around who fits the criteria and there are others who don't, you know, could go ahead and vaccinate those people.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for paying attention to Mr. Lazary's tweets on that. New subject. Fiscal Bureau report today painted a generally, a pretty rosier picture of state finances, but there's nuances that you and I have to go into here. So let's talk about that. New Fiscal Bureau report, July 1 balance, end of the current two-year biennial budget, balance 1.76 in the general fund, more than $600 million higher than DOA, Department of Administration, had predicted in November. $993 million in the rainy day fund. The increases are due to, obviously, federal COVID-19 aid, higher federal reimbursements for Medicaid, which I find interesting. Our Medicaid program had been paid for 59% by the federal government. Because of COVID, that jumped to 65%. And finally, a jump in corporate tax collections. The governor, a footnote, he will give the legislature his proposed budget on Tuesday, February 16th. And now quickly, the responses of the new co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, Senator Howard Markline and Representative Mark Bourne, in terms of the rosier prediction on state finances. Businesses have closed, jobs have been lost, families have been through tough times. That is why it is imperative that the next budget ensures we spend within our means while also funding our priorities. But Scott, I want to get your input, because now there's a story that if we go along with federal tax changes and allow the deductions for those entities that got paycheck protection programs, that would be about a $450 million hit to tax collections. Your thoughts?
Well, that's real money, but the Fiscal Bureau report, I think, caught a lot of people by surprise, given how much rosier it was. Nearly $1.2 billion more money projected by the end of the next biennium, by the middle of 2023, than they had forecast just 3 months ago. And as you mentioned, the timing coming just 3 weeks before the governor delivers his budget. I imagine his budget writers have got their erasers out and, changing some numbers. We don't know. I don't think we know, unless the governor commented today on what he's going to do about that $400 million. But his revenue secretary is talking about it. There's a lot in play. And Steve, as you know, when we were at this point in the budget process, what gets introduced in February is a far cry from what gets passed in June or July, and is a far cry from what gets signed into law. Many miles to go on this one. But, that Fiscal Bureau report was way more optimistic than I think many people expected.
You think it's fair to say that what we don't know about the cost of the COVID-19 aid from coming from Washington will be a major determinant in what the governor recommends on February 16th, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge amount of money, potentially. There's a lot of unknowns going forward with the continued economic impact of the pandemic at top of the list and many other things, but certainly a better report than it could have been.
Okay, new subject. The state committee that oversees the Capitol grounds and the executive residence has given a green light to a statue of Vel Phelps. And let's talk about her as a pioneer. She was Wisconsin's first African-American Secretary of State. She was Wisconsin's first African-American judge, first woman and African-American elected to the Milwaukee Common Council, first African-American woman to graduate from the UW-Madison Law School. Statue is contemplated at a cost, I think, of about $241 million. As you're well aware, Scott, there's only one corner of the Capitol of the Capitol grounds that doesn't have a monument, and that would be South Hamilton. There's a subcommittee that will be recommending the design of a Vel Phelps statue and a potential where it might be located. Also, let's update two statues that were toppled in June 23 protests forward on the State Street end of the Capitol, and Colonel Hans Christian Haig on the other side of the Capitol will be, let's see, they will be reinstalled this summer. Some just PSs, Vel Phelps died in April of 2018 at the age of 95. So we'll be getting a new statue, Scott, sounds like?
Sounds like. I think the only question is where exactly does it go? And the family is advocating for that outside spot that would be comparable to the Forward and the Haig statues. There's a law enforcement memorial at the fourth corner.
Yeah,
But there's also talk in the possibility of that statue going inside the building. So I guess we'll stay tuned and see what happens there.
You bet. And now it's time for a little a short video clip. Vel Phelps' son talks about the many honors of his mother and a response of another official planning the potential statue. Please.
I just want to recap some of the qualifications that my mom brings to the table. In 1951, she was the first African-American woman to graduate from UW Law School. This is all before you, of course. 1956, she was the first African-American and woman elected to the Milwaukee Common Council. In 1960, she was the first African-American elected to the National Committee of either political party. In 1971, she was the first judge and in Milwaukee County and the first African-American judge in Wisconsin history. And in 1978, she was the first African-American and the first woman elected to statewide office in the United States, and when she gained that election to the Secretary of State.
Our proposal asks that you allow us, on behalf of the state of Wisconsin, to recognize in the most visible and honorable way the remarkable achievements and contributions of possibly Wisconsin's most influential African-American woman. We ask that you consider not only the appropriateness of our proposal, but how our statue will enhance the ways visitors experience the Capitol Park for generations to come.
I want to update on a subject that was announced after we taped the last Rewind. The governor then put out a press release saying he's interested in suing businesses that are responsible for the chemical PFAS, and I cannot pronounce their chemical name, so I'm going to use PFAS as the shorthand. They are found in industrial and household products, firefighting foam, and are linked to diseases and cancers. The DNR has found high PFAS concentration in Northeast Wisconsin. Big issue in Marinette, formerly represented by no longer a state representative, John Nygren, and Madison Area Lakes. In fact, the DNR just reported recently PFAS have been found in all five Madison Area Lakes. They're called the Forever Chemical. And DNR is now testing fish in Madison Area's lake as it may lead to fish consumption warnings. Just to update, the Evers administration has asked the State Justice Department, led by our Attorney General Mr. Call, to solicit private law firms to consider claims and eventual lawsuits. Let me just read the quote from the governor. PFAS can have devastating effects not only on our state's ecosystem and vital natural resources, but on the health of our families and communities. These companies responsible for the contamination of our land and water should be accountable, drew this response from the president of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, Kurt Bauer. The threat of lawsuits is an unfortunate political stunt. They want to sue businesses for the past use of compounds for which no standards have been set under either federal or state law. The point is that DNR is considering PFAS standards. So that's just an update on an item that came about after we taped last week's Rewind. Scott, help me look ahead to what might or might not happen next week, please.
Yeah, so Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, said that they will be back next week to vote on that, on repealing the mask order. They don't have a scheduled session day. They recessed yesterday. They didn't adjourn. They recessed to a date at the call of the chair, so they can come back really whenever they want. I think there's a couple committee hearings on the calendar for Tuesday, so maybe Tuesday would be a day to look for them. Maybe Thursday, maybe not next week. But the speaker says they're coming back next week.
And the State Election Commission, I think, meets Wednesday. I haven't looked at their agenda. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, they're going to review what happened in the 2020 election. So to refresh viewers' minds, there was some controversy in that election, as an understatement. So they're going to be talking about that. They're going to be talking about the Eric Movers list. It will be a marathon meeting yet again, I suspect, from the Elections Commission.
Yeah, lots of news next week. I'm Steve Walders.
I'm Scott Bauer.
I want to thank Scott for filling in with JR. JR, I'll be back next week. That's Rewind for January 29.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.